And I'm just so you know that I'm not treating the recording part of this too preciously. I'm going to take a big drink of water while I'm rolling.
Right.
Delicious.
It
looks like it kind of got excited on me.
Oh, wait, is that a picture of Gerald that you just kind of slid
over? Yeah. Can you? Yeah, here. All shit. Yes.
Oh.
Gerald and Robert Bessida.
Yeah.
I got my fun new AI camera that like hangs out with me as I move around. Yeah. And fancy in this little studio. How you doing, Catherine?
I'm good. It's, as I said in the beginning of our little chat, it's Monday. The week is full of potential, you know?
Right.
So I'm embracing that.
That sounds like a mantra that maybe is not your first Monday saying that.
No.
Have you said it before?
Thing is like, can my three-year-old wake the fuck up like on time so we can get out the door on time so that I can get him to school on time and to my doctor's appointment on time. Yeah, that was my mantra this morning.
You know, all I hear from friends and peers of mine with kids are stories that make me want to have kids like that. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get started. So early.
It's very, very good. I'm on baby number two. I'm cooking baby number two right now. So it's
Goodness. Congratulations.
Lots of joy.
And we should establish, I always establish first if I can. I do not know you at all. I told you a little bit about me just before we started, just for context of the show, but this is going in blind. We're like two strangers.
Yeah. I mean, we have all of those degrees of connection, one very particular person in common, but, and of course,
do you want to tell everybody who that is, or we can leave that as like an end of the show mystery.
Stephen Kopp, all of a sudden it was so Stephen and I worked at the same company. We overlapped for about a year and a half maybe. And I had been there for months and I was at our holiday party and Brandon was actually bartending and I was like drunk and was like, what the fuck, Brandon, what are you doing here?
It's Brandon Harris, who did the show about four or five episodes ago.
And he is very good friends with Stephen, as I think you are. And anyway, he's like, well, yeah, Stephen got me in here to do a bunch of handyman, like, you know, ad hoc stuff.
Right.
And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, Stephen went to school of the arts. Anyway, Stephen and I had been working together for months and months, had no idea that we both went to school of the arts, just at different times.
Right.
And then we ended up forming our own little team for a little while as well. I got to manage Stephen and it was really cool. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Steven's the best. And I'm going to have him on this show soon to talk about it, but I haven't been very loud. He's been helping produce the show, for this, you know, in the 2023 year, because I finally, you know, realized that really the key to making this successful is bringing more people in, which seems like such an obvious thing given what it is when you think about it. But it was always something that I would have these one-off conversations with people and it would be fun. And then we'd post an episode and then maybe a couple clips and then be like, oh, that was great. You know, Greg Walter at one point was like, it's kind of my favorite little story I've ever told of my life before. I just had such a good time. Like I had some great experiences and especially with the faculty, but it would be so isolated and kind of ephemeral. And then I move on and it was always my own thing. But I finally decided, it's got to be a wee thing if it's ever going to be a big thing, which I'd love it to be because I think there's a lot of value in it. So Steven's been helping us out. And I also don't know if you know this, but and it's like it was breeze past this because it's not great listening material. But Brandon is like my oldest friend in the world. We've been friends since fifth grade and he's the reason that I went to School of the Arts.
Wow.
So I'm even closer with Brandon than I am with Steven. We have that connection maybe more so.
Okay.
Yeah. He was the best man at my wedding, for example.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Brandon and I, were we 2 years apart at school? Something like that.
Yes, that sounds right. I think he was 10, you were 08.
Yeah. But we were definitely drinking buddies at parties and definitely have always had that like kind of dearness to each other. So
he's the best. Yeah. And he's going to be on the show again too, because it's crazy. I've been doing this for so long and he hadn't done it. This whole time until just a month ago. Mm-hmm. So he's going to hopefully come on soon and share all his stuff. But let's talk about you. I know all about Brandon and Stephen. Boring. Game over. Quit. I want to start over with a new session, and I want to start with you. Okay. Where are you from, dear?
Oh, well, I was born in upstate New York, which is also where I am right now, just different town. I was born in Syracuse, moved to Jersey, moved to Indiana, moved to Florida, which is where I met some other NCSA or UNCSA.
All that by age?
Moved to Orlando at age 15.
Okay.
Age 15, Wesley Taylor and I were in high school. We were in the same class, like became part of the best friend kind of group. Also Chris French. Actually a lot of other DMP people who ended up at NCSA, Marcus Bridgewater. Anyway.
One of those schools that seems to funnel.
We churn them out. Yeah.
I love that.
The three big D's. Oh God. The three.
Oh goodness. Big D's. Please tell me about three big D's, Catherine. What a way to start.
Dr. Phillips, which is where I went, Dreyfus, okay. Douglas Anderson. These were like the three big schools.
I've heard of these. Yeah.
Turning out the theater talent. We all
those big triple D's. We all know them.
Lots of big energy around there. Mm-hmm. And then went up to North Carolina for school and then up to New York. Yeah. So I've made a kind of a circle around half of the country here and back where I started.
Yeah. Have you spent, sounds like, other than I think I heard Indiana, it's been a lot of East Coast though, mostly. That's really your home area. Have you spent much time outside of that? As far as like, you spending time in LA? Do you think about that showcase wise, or was it an easy choice to just go?
I had actually, before I graduated at conservatory, I had a manager in LA. I never really took breaks at school. I would always go study somewhere else during the summer. So mm-hmm. I think somewhere between my junior and senior year at NCSA, I went to LA to study with Laura Henry and to do more Meisner stuff, and lived out there and auditioned and stuff like that. And it just wasn't my jam. I really didn't like that I would go to parties and everybody there was in the industry and had opinions about what I should be doing to get into the entertainment industry. It was just a big turnoff for me. And I also,
you didn't find that in New York.
No.
Mm.
No. Like my husband's a psychologist. Developmental.
My wife's a therapist.
Psychologist. Like, yeah. Well, so we have, we need that as artists. We need somebody to be fucking real with us sometimes.
Yes.
And to help us grow up a little bit. I met people and I wouldn't have the career that I have if I had been out in LA. I have no idea what I would be doing, but it really wasn't, it just didn't feel like my vibe. And so since I'm from New York as a kid, I always wanted to get back. So
of course that makes total sense to me. Let me back up a little bit. I kind of jumped to that showcase question, but I want to talk a little bit more about why all the moving.
My dad, he's an intellectual, I mean, now he's retired, but he was an intellectual property. And I never fully understood.
He was in intellectual property? He was an intellectual property.
In the business of intellectual property.
Got it. It's like, so, who's he owned by?
Yeah, right. a lot of knowledge in there. I just remember he used to carry around this like big silver briefcase that was always locked and he'd have to take it on every vacation we ever went on, like top secret stuff in there, you know, before.
Like a fucking Mission Impossible briefcase?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like as if it were his laptop, you know, with secrets that he'd have to enter into a VPN.
Catherine, did he have to, or it was fucking cool as shit to do?
that's up.
We'll never know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't really know what he, until later I understood finally that he was involved in help. He's not a lawyer, but he was involved in helping companies license their IP to new places. So the last job he had was like help a company called Rockwell Collins that creates technology for the military. And he was helping to, I believe, mainstream that into vehicles and things like that. So I think he's kind of like me. Like he has his PhD in poetry. From Syracuse University, which is why I was born.
Those listening didn't see my facial expression adjust to a PhD in poetry.
Yeah.
Can we pause on that for 1 second? How did the grandparents feel about the son getting a PhD in poetry? I went to School of the Arts, and if my kid said, I want to be a doctor of poetry, I'd be like, bro, we need to talk it out. I'm going to need some convincing. I'm going to need you to lobby this congressman because it's not sounding great.
I think by the time he got to that place, he had been in school for so many years.
They were like, he's a student. I don't know.
Yeah. And he was their firstborn. They had like three other kids to deal with. Like, I don't
know. At a time when school costs a different amount of money as well. We should point that out for any of the youngsters who don't know. There was a time when you could just keep going to college and it actually wasn't going to kill you.
Yeah.
You just weren't making anything.
Like, this is like Vietnam time as well. And so like there was an issue with my dad, like staying in school, kind of like popping around to different jobs. He would kind of drop in and out of school. And he did that at the wrong time and he got drafted. And so then I think just like school was a safe zone. So I think he stayed for as long as he could.
I totally understand that. And coming out of Vietnam, I can literally only imagine that you had to be in a state of like, when are we going back to something like that? Like, that was such a crazy, tumultuous time. So you'd want to start playing it safe in general, I think. You know, get a job with a damn retirement plan if you can.
Or get a PhD in poetry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, something that lock you in for a lifetime of
financial stability.
But so you're growing up with dad is a very creative fella, very smart fella, clearly. What's the rest of the family dynamic like?
Mom is a nurse, or like in and out of working at either nursing facilities or optometrists, or for a while she was at a city institution called Community Addictions Program. So helping, you know, kind of helping people who are in a state of needing support around addiction and their family.
So she's kind of taken her degree as Pops floats around to different places he needs to be. And she's like, well, where can I fucking get something going here? Yeah. That's smart.
Exactly. Yeah. But also like being super accessible to me and my brother. She was super, super involved as a mom. She was like the PTA queen of everything, you know.
That can be tough with nurses. That's great.
Oh,
no, yes. I mean, for real, because of scheduling. And I mean, especially if they work in a hospital or something like that. I mean, a lot of times a nurse mom you don't see your nurse mom a lot.
Right. Yeah. I think
that's a blessing.
I only remember one period of time like that, but I think that she managed to, maintain a kind of a part-time-ish schedule for the most part. She was always there to get me from school, you know, always. I don't have a memory of my mother not being around, you know.
In contrast, was dad around?
No, absolutely not.
Got it.
Yeah.
So like around lived in the house, but like you just didn't see him because he was at work?
Yeah.
Or traveling
Yeah, traveling a lot. Like wake up early, come home late, and also like alcoholic. So like out drinking. And also there were times when he didn't live with us. There were times that he, like when we were living in Jersey for a while, he was living in a different part of Jersey to be closer to the office. Maybe, I don't know. I've never gotten that full story. When we moved around, he would move a year before us to like get set up like for a full year. So Not around that much. So mom's
little mystery there. Yeah.
Definitely. Lots of mysteries in my family. Lots of unanswered questions forever and ever.
So you said brother.
Yeah.
Only sibling.
Yeah.
How's bro? What's bro like?
Bro is an evangelical Christian living in Indiana, where we spent about 9 years of our childhood. He never wanted to leave. So he tried.
So like you.
Oh, well, yeah. I went back to home base. Well, I did go back to home base, but he identified home base as, because, I came back to upstate New York.
Sure.
But he identified home base as Indiana, which was what we grew up with. I think they identified as atheists for a lot of our childhood, atheist parents.
Your parents.
Uh-huh. And then we moved to the city of churches, which is Fort Wayne, Indiana. I don't remember how many, churches per blocks or city blocks
they win
were, but like they win.
Got it.
Like it in public school we would like pray before meals at like big gatherings and stuff, so very, very very saturated in Christianity. And my brother had, as a lot of kids do, a lot of youth do, had a difficult time growing into himself, and I think got pretty, he was looking for answers. He was looking for a community. He was looking for who he was. And
that's what it's there for.
And he found God. I found theater and he found God. So,
both great things to do on a Sunday.
Right.
So I think you absolutely have that. No, we actually talked about that in the episode with Brandon. It's one of my favorite themes that I actually encounter with a lot of people who enter the arts for various reasons, but come from more maybe a conservative religious backgrounds. And then on the tail end of it, realize their agnosticism kind of because of the theater, and in a weird way, because they see so many perspectives, or they at least end up landing on a bunch of, I don't fucking know what's going on. I think is that's maybe the one thing I think that the art of theater regularly teaches us. If you're really paying attention, there's a few lessons in there, but one of them's definitely like, you don't know. Like, you just don't know. You don't know what's going on with somebody else. You don't know how the world works. You don't know how you really feel, probably. You just, like, give it room to not be fucking sure. Right. And, you know, all due respect to everybody, because I'm from Texas and I believe in do whatever you want in a really serious way. However, that word evangelical even is tied to, I am going to go out into the world and say I'm sure about this.
Yeah.
And I think fundamentally theater kind of goes, are you sure? That's exactly what it does.
That's so smart. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And that's the way that I operate in everything that I do. I'm that person that, and actually it's my husband's culture and my culture kind of bat heads a lot, is because every Serbian, my husband's Serbian, every Serb is totally sure. Even if they have no idea what they're talking about, they're completely sure. And they're trying to convince you. And I'm like, this is like maybe what I think, but like, let's bounce this off of each other and let me read a bunch more stuff. And like, what do you, which is not great for the role, the like the current profession that I'm in. I have to be like pretty sure of stuff. But I do a lot of investigation to get there. Yeah, no, you're completely right. It's like, we're a pretty open bunch, and there's always more than one answer to the question, I believe.
Right.
There's some choice, right? As an actor, there are choices that make it more dynamic and more interesting, but there's a lot of fucking choices.
Yeah, and across the board. And I think that that's one of the things that anyone who hopefully is getting arts training can accept. And this is the tough thing about music. And my wife has, before she was a therapist, she went to San Francisco Conservatory of Music for classical voice. That was her bachelor. So we both have that conservatory like experience in undergrad. And it's a little different with classical music because, man, of all the art forms, and ballet is kind of close to this too. It's like, it's right or it's wrong. It's kind of like, because that's the point. The point is that perfection, that there is a thing to get right. Mm-hmm. But in almost every other form of art and almost every other form of storytelling, it's subjective. And it's a question of, what do you think? What else could we be doing? And even the great people, I usually name drop Gerald on this particular topic, because even though he would have you, you know, work so hard on clarifying like a spine, at the end of the day, he could like be like, well, and that could be wrong. He's like, what do you mean it could be wrong? We've been working on it for 3 fucking weeks. You know how many books I looked at like this? What do you mean we're still not done? And he's like, well, you're never done.
So this, like, we kind of talked about mantras in a way. I have a mantra that I stick to, and that I just notice it as a theme everywhere, that form, right? You're talking about like classical music, ballet, even Gerald's story, slogan, spine stuff, comedy technique,
right.
Form, right? And it's, I would hazard a guess, I don't know this for sure, I know a lot of musicians, but I've never really asked the question, that anybody who's really good at jazz also studied classically, right? Has studied a lot of like precise classical music, that form provides a structure for freedom. So that
I disagree with you.
Really?
I
oh
do.
My God. Oh,
only
you're like,
because I know examples of it.
Okay.
One of my favorite musicians, is Jack White. I love Jack White from the White Stripes, and now of his own accord. I'm also a big fan of Dave Grohl of Nirvana and then Foo Fighters. Both of them have an incredibly intuitive, instinctual relationship with composing music. For the longest time, and I don't know how much this is still true because they've gone on to have really long careers, But Dave Grohl in particular, I remember seeing him in an interview. I started playing drums when I was like 10. And I remember seeing him in an interview talking about how he didn't know time signatures. Like he didn't even really know what that meant.
Yeah.
And he was like, I can't read sheet music for drums. He was like, I write and speak in drum. And I either do it for you or I'm like, boom, bam, ba-doom, doom, you know, I'm scatting it or whatever. It's in my head. It's in my mouth. It's on my hands. It's not on paper. Yeah. I wouldn't even know what to do with it if you handed it to me. And he's not known as a dude who just plays 1/4 time, you know, or 4/4 time. He doesn't just play the same thing over and over again. He's an incredibly, and then he went on to write music and, you know, for guitar and stuff like that, of course, as well, and composing that. But I think there are a lot of people who really just sit down with the sound and the ears and the work and just do it. Stand-up comedy, another great art form that is fully like, you can learn a little bit about how jokes work. Like you can study fundamentally how setup, punch and stuff. You can also never think about it analytically and just get up there and feel it out every single time until it becomes an instinct and you just start doing this because it's funny.
This is my question, is that does the experimentation become a form, right?
For yes. those
people, and the instinct becomes the form, right? Like we're humans. We try to find patterns everywhere. We try yes. to categorize everything. We try to find patterns. And there are some geniuses out there who maybe don't have to do that. I'm certainly not one of them, but I think that there's some level of like going back to the tried and true. Oh God, what is his name? I'm forgetting the composer that like does the Simpsons theme song. Da, 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 da. And he worked with Tim Burton on all of his stuff.
Also, is it Elfman?
Yes. Yes.
Danny Elfman? I think
so. Yes. And no idea how to read or write music, right?
Oh, maybe is that true?
Maybe he's figured it
right,
out.
Right, right, right. You always have to think.
Long career. But yeah. Well, again, here I am with the, well, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe
I think both are a path to it. And right. I think that this is the key, is that what the original disagreement between the two things we just said was, is that you were suggesting that there must be some sort of conventional, by the way you worded it, maybe that's not what you meant, that there was some sort of conventional study kind mm-hmm. of almost required in order to get to that improvisational skill level. And mm-hmm. I think that you can just be born into and succeed into that skill improvisationally and never really study the classical form. I think there's plenty of modern dancers who never really learn a lot of like ballet technique that's specific to ballet, because they may know how to point a little bit, but they don't know how to do the pirouettes on point like a fucking ballerina. That's just crazy. It takes years.
Yeah.
But they may not know how to do that, but they're still like crazy good dancers, you know, like next level good dancers, and they know how to feel it.
Yeah. So my husband, as I mentioned, is a developmental psychologist. He teaches at Pratt Institute in New York City.
Oh, that's cool.
And one of the things that he is, because it's an art school.
That's an art school.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
And so one of the things that he talks a lot about is like, yes, you're incredibly gifted. Like you are incredibly gifted at making the art that you make specifically, whatever it is, you know, jewelry design, sculpture, architecture, whatever. But what are you going to make it about? And he feels like that is his job, right? To help guide. How do we think about what we're going to make this about? And having that be the, you know, you can have developed randomly or be born with some innate ability, but like at the end of the day, you have to at some point focus it if you want to have there to be a desired result, right?
How is that not at every art school? How many art schools have a developmental psychologist helping the artist think about their work? That's fucking genius. I mean, we had some fucking amateur versions of that for sure. No, I mean that I'm trying to give a compliment to the people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's not a clinical psychologist, but Ashley Jansen okay. blew my
yep,
mind
exactly who I was gonna
over
say.
And over again about how I thought about the shit I was making. So it wasn't, it's not there, but man, to have someone who really is coming from a very kind of academic, scholarly, clinical approach to the thoughts about psychology, I think that's great.
Yeah.
And that's, I bet you have the most amazing conversations after work. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Oh, we do. But also it's a lot about like who's going to get the milk and the strawberries and who.
Right. You got other stuff to do. So you get these kids in the way. I can't relate.
Early in our relationship. Yeah. A lot more of that.
We used to talk about art and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, we end up having one of these conversations, you know, but yeah, gets fewer.
That's good.
We'll get back to it eventually.
So, all right, well then let's fill in the gap a little bit then. So 2008, you take off, you're like, definitely want to do the New York thing. That's what's in your head, right?
Yes, yes. I had a very successful consortium. So I got to choose my favorite agent. Who,
for our younger listeners, Showcase used to be called Consortium because we would do it with other schools.
Ah, yes.
They don't do that anymore.
Okay.
They changed it. I'm not correcting you. I'm just filling in the gaps. If anyone hears the word consortium and they graduated in 2019, they're going to be like, I don't know what that
is. I don't know what that is. Yeah.
They changed it.
Yeah. So I graduated and got an agent. I was with Cornerstone, which no longer exists because unfortunately my agent, Mark Schlegel, killed himself.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Gosh, was that 2014, 2015? 2016, somewhere in there. But yeah, I most wonderful man on the planet. You never know what people are going through. Right. And fantastic agent. But yeah, I should I go down this road? Should I give the what happened after school spiel?
Well, it's up to you. Let me ask you this, because this is what I'm interested in. Okay. It's my show. When you left school, this is the thing I've kind of developed this question over time. I guess it's becoming a stock question, even though I always say I don't have any, but this is just so interesting to me. You enter school at, how old were you when you started the 18. Drama school? 18. Okay. So you're 18 years old. You have a certain vision for what you think this school is going to do for you so that you can X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
When you graduate and you go to consortium /okay/, hey, everybody, here's my scenes that I did. You get your representation, whatever. In that moment, the let me pack my shit out of Winston-Salem, get the fuck out of here. In that moment, you have an idea, a vision for what you want, what the school did for you, how that's going to go now.
Yeah.
In your mind. How are those two moments different? What is different between how you went into school thinking, I can't wait, let me give you an example. You enter school, let's say, I'm gonna give an example that's not you. You enter school thinking, man, I can't wait to be a musical theater actor. I was in every musical in my high school, and maybe I didn't go to a number one musical theater school, but I went to a good acting school, and it's gonna make me a great actor for musicals, and then I'm gonna get out and I'm gonna love it. And then you leave school 4 years later and you're like, I think I want to be a stunt coordinator because Dale Gerard's the coolest guy I've ever met. And I fell in love with sword fighting. I didn't even know you could do that for a living. You can. Fuck acting in musicals. I don't even like dancing anyway. I'm going to go be a fucking stunt coordinator and make that my life. See how things have changed because I went to school there. So for you, was there a change or was it a trajectory that when you left, you were like, yep, that helped and I'm off to do my fucking musicals or whatever your thing was?
So holistically, they were exactly the same.
Cool.
I came in and I was like, I am a fucking star. I am. I have a beautiful voice that I've been training forever. I am a good actress and I'm going to graduate having the best agent and I'm going to go off and be a superstar.
Broadway.
I think that the two things that maybe were a bit different, right? And of course, I would love to go back and really feel all those feelings, you know,
all. This is the best I can do for you.
Yeah, no, this is great. I've never thought about this before. The two things that were different is that, so I had been studying vocally since the age of 5 with a Broadway coach. I'd been singing my whole life. And I really kept that up with Janine, with Greg, with everybody at school. But what I really cultivated was the work with Mary Irwin. And I knew that if I was going to do anything else other than acting, that I would become a Linklater voice instructor, which I did try to do at some point, which I am not. I am not a Linklater voice instructor. But at this point, who knows? Who knows in the future? Mary's still doing her thing, so I could go work with her again, I'm sure. I graduated. This has nothing to do with career, but I graduated with basically no friends.
What does that have to do with?
I think it has a lot to do with a lot, you know, your community, and how you interact with your community really bolsters you. So, I'd come out of high school with a powerhouse group of like six best friends, Wesley Taylor being one of them. And we were all off to our various conservatories. And throughout my experience at NCSA, through different circumstances, through the way I conducted myself, through roles that I got, through opportunities I was given, and a million things, I graduated with no real friends. And so, you know, everybody from my class was moving to Astoria. And I was like, I guess I'll go to Astoria. And Sierra Payton and I ended up becoming roommates for a little while. And like, I didn't even really make that work very well. I was so focused on the career that I wanted and the work that I was really not spending time with friends and spending time cultivating that aspect of things. And I think that if I had really leaned into the very communal environment that NCSA had provided, things might have turned out fairly differently in my life at this point.
It sounds like you, in your tone, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you're taking the majority responsibility in your graduating with that relationship.
I think that that there's responsibility to go around, but
sure. I just said majority.
Yeah. I'm so far removed from it at this point that the only clear things that I can see are what I could have done differently.
I think that's the healthiest way to look at it. It's my super amateur, not my wife or your husband opinion on it.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, you know, let that experience dictate how I value friendships now.
You know, my two cents on that, not on your experience, of course, I wouldn't, but just on that notion, man, it's fucking tough, dude. It is. That's my first sentence. It is so great if you click with your class while you're at a school like that, that's so small. If you come out of high school and you go straight to that school and you click with your class, or at least like a half, 2/3 of them, and you kind of ride that all the way through. And then when you graduate, you all like get a fucking apartment together in New York City. Cool. That's probably half of every class. Yeah. Half of every class has this, like, it's like half of them just fucking melt together. And it's like every fucking day they sit together for lunch, and every fucking weekend they party together, and they pick out their fucking outfits for the parties together. And it's like, they're this little clique, and that's dope. There are always the other half of the class that are broken up into like maybe two more tiny 2 or 3 person cliques. And there's like 2 people, 3 people, 5 people in the class who just fucking don't. And then they may not be a loner. They may not be an introvert. They may just not click with these fucking people because it's a small ass group of people. Yeah. And when you have that experience and yet you're spending, you know, 70 hours a week with these people that you don't click with for whatever reason, somebody's fault. First of all, someone's going to end up being an asshole to each other, because that's just built into a bunch of people forced to be in a room that don't fucking love being in the room with each other all the goddamn time. So like, that's going to be built into it. I mean, I'll confess. And I think people, if they haven't figured out by listening to the show, I'm like that middle thing I said, I'm like part of that other 2 or 3 group that, you know, I never felt totally isolated. Wiley was in my directing class, Steven, I have friends, but I didn't, because I also had a weird relationship with how I got put into the school. I didn't fucking have that. And I was in a class that had like probably 10, 12, 15 people that felt like they were all fucking best friends. And 4 years is a long ass time to be in that, to that thing I just described. And so when you leave, I think it takes all those people who, if you clicked and you moved to fucking New York and then you spent 15 years hanging out with those same people, that's fucking dope. You got your own little Friends How I Met Your Mother bar group. Fucking cool, dude. That's dope. I have never been that kind of person in general. And I definitely didn't have that with my graduating class of people at School of the Arts. So when you leave, you kind of have to surrender and accept that there's a huge freedom. And now you get to fucking go find your people. Find the people that you do click with, that you love, that like get you, and spend fucking 70 hours a week with those motherfuckers and see what comes up, because it's going to be super rewarding.
Yeah, I think that the conflict for me is I thought I was part of it. Like, and I love the people. I still deeply
love people. Let me be clear about that. Me too.
Yeah. And I really thought I was part of it. But I think that the...
Are you sure you weren't?
Not to the level of, like, when you have somebody call you up a couple of weeks after graduating school telling you that they're in a 12-step program and they want to call for making fun of you for the entire 4 years and like thinking that you were a heinous bitch and like basically just like hating on you to everybody the whole 4 years.
I apologize for laughing at that. You presented it a little comically. So I put a little bit of that on you. No, but I will take responsibility. I apologize for laughing at that. So.
You don't have to apologize for laughing. It's fine. I couldn't believe it when I got the call. Then you have to realize, and like, there were just so many, especially the guys in my class, I really wanted to be close with them. And I just realized that I'm not. Like, I tried to keep up with them after school, like text them when I would see something cool that they did, and just like zero response. I'm like, okay, people were having weddings, didn't get invited to them. I will say that Quinn Gordon, who is just one of the best humans on the planet, I did get invited to his wedding, and I feel very, very happy about that. But you know, when you're not invited to weddings and stuff like that, it's like, oh, I thought we had a different relationship. So anyway, it's, you know, but it, as you've said, it's opened an opportunity to go find my people and for me to spend time reconnecting with some of my high school people who, you know, I didn't give as much attention to in college because we were all doing different things. Right. So yeah, I think I have.
And I want to go ahead and point this out. If by chance there's anybody who's like in high school, at School of the Arts, or maybe you're thinking about going to school soon and you're going to be like a freshman and you're young, please do not romanticize the notion of meeting your life partner at School of the fucking Arts. Not because it's a bad place to meet people.
Please don't.
But yeah. This whole, I met my fucking wife and mother and my kids in high school, and then we went to college together, and then we got, you know, success together, and we lived this Hollywood life. Oh, I'm not referring to anyone in particular. I'm not referring to anyone in particular. I'm just saying that's rare as shit, and it's weird. It's great, but it's weird. It's not going to happen for you, probably. And that's wonderful.
And that's wonderful.
There's a lot of people to meet when you're not fucking 17 years old.
My husband is from Serbia. We have homes in Croatia. We I know some of a different language. He's
you hear that, kids? Think of the places you could have homes, the languages you could know. Stay out. Don't commit.
Live your life. Make choices that will make you happy.
Have your art school orgies and move on with your life.
Yes.
Get somebody who gets you.
Yeah. Make choices.
Okay. So let's talk about after that then. Cause it sounds like we kind of got ourselves up to the like 15, 16 ish. Mm. What's been going on since then?
Yeah. Well, so I graduated, right? And I started auditioning and just like talking to my apartment wall for a very long time, you know, trying to,
of course,
right, work on auditions and bartended and everything for years and years. But I very, you know, right out of the gate, I started dating somebody who had graduated from NCSA like 7 or 8 years ahead of me. And I saw him that he was still bartending and that was his only source of income, really, except for gigs here and there. And I was noticing his friends from his class and just like noticing that there was still a lot of what I saw as compromise and what you really wanted to do all the time. right? Mm. For a lot of people. I'm not saying that there aren't incredible bartenders that make their lives doing that and love it.
Oh, sure.
I'm just not one of them. I remember having like very distinctive breakdowns about like the fact that I poisoned people for a living. And I thought, well, this is not great. So I started doing like everything else. I started volunteering like almost full time for a girls program called Vibe Theater Experience in New York City. They're still in operation. They're fantastic, helping young women write music, produce music, write plays, put on those one woman shows. I started doing an internship at a social media or at a social network in marketing, which is the path that I ended up leading. I became a yoga instructor. I started my own yoga clothing company produced out of the Bronx, and we produced our fabric in the Bronx and designed in Brooklyn. I did a lot of different things, and I'm sure.
Can I ask you a question at this juncture?
Yeah.
Did you have that existential breakdown of I went to conservatory, I spent my whole life learning how to do this thing, and now I'm doing all these other things, and that's not what I went to school for? Oh my God, I'm a failure.
Well, kind of, almost all of the
parts. I'm summing up what I've heard from others who have experienced this. So I'm.
Yeah, almost all of the parts of that. I realized that my identity was so tied to acting. And I felt like I had already paid my dues. I'd been like working in the industry since I was a child. Mm-hmm. I'd been modeling since I was 13, you know, like massive worldwide campaigns. I was like, I'm already a professional. Like, why am I not booking? Why am I not? I booked 2 jobs in 8 years. And I had a moment where I got super, super sick. I have a disease called ulcerative colitis that I discovered my senior year of conservatory. In 2014, I got so sick that I almost died. I lost all of my hair. My skeletal system deteriorated. I had to have a hip replacement. It took me like 3 years to get rid of that limp. My life completely changed, and I didn't look the same, which for an actor is important, right? And so I'd spent time doing all these things, right, knowing that the acting wasn't making me happy. So I was trying to find joy in work, doing these other things, but still not really making much money doing them because I wasn't committing to anything, right? I was kind of like handpicking at what was going to work. And I just had to stop. Like, I had to stop something or a lot of things, right? Because at that time I was consulting as a marketer. I was still trying to be an actor. I was, running the yoga clothing company, and I was still teaching yoga. And with ulcerative colitis, you know, at its worst, I was going to the bathroom 40 times a day. Literally couldn't work. I couldn't go out of my house. I tried to go see a Broadway show that my friend was in, and I shit my pants on the subway. Like, I couldn't do anything. I spent almost an entire year on the couch, and I almost died. And I put my husband under incredible amounts of strain, right? Of course I can't control this disease, but I can control the stress that I put myself on that aggravates the disease.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I closed up shop. I mean, I'm saying this like it was easy. It was not easy in any way.
I don't want to correct you, but I did not take anything you just said as sounding easy to me.
Oh no, I mean the next part. I closed up shop at the yoga clothing company. Okay. I stopped teaching yoga, and I called Mark Schlegel and I said, I have to be done. And I went and I dyed my hair purple because I looked way too much like my mother after my hair had fallen out for my liking. And I went full-fledged into marketing because I realized that it gave me a creative outlook. Like, it gave me an opportunity to pull in my people who I love and who I wanted to support through the arts. Like, the number of times that I've hired Ben Yannetti for photography, for like events that I've run for marketing purposes is, I don't even know the number anymore, at least 30. And it gave me stability, which I needed for my physical health, for my mental health, And so that I could start a family eventually. Like, my husband was sitting here, like, being the sole breadwinner, essentially, because I was just doing odd jobs and trying to make entrepreneurship work when I didn't know anything about running a business. And so I've been doing that. I've been doing marketing and now for tech for, I don't know, how many years is that? That's since 2015, I guess, full time. And I miss the acting a lot, but I'm much happier. And letting go of that part of my personality was really hard. It took 8 years. It took 8 fucking years. Like, I graduated and I knew, like, this isn't going very well. Like, I'm not good at auditioning. I'm not booking these jobs. It took 8 years and probably like 1500 auditions for me to say, okay, but that thing that everybody says, I don't know if you had business with Beseda when you went through NCSA, but in business with Beseda, the class, he would always say, if you can do anything else, go do it. And I think that there is an unhelpful, and I don't know if this is still the case, but an unhelpful drumbeat throughout my youth as an actor and leading up to graduating from conservatory is like this mantra of, I can't possibly do anything else. I'm an actor. I can't do anything else. And that was such a fucking lie for me. Mm. And I had to break it. I had to say goodbye to that belief, which is absolutely not true. I'm now developing the competitive intelligence program for a machine learning company. Like, I can super do other things. I still don't believe that I can, right? I still have imposter syndrome all the time, but like, I can super do other things and I can be the primary breadwinner of my little family. And
that's not a small thing.
No, no. And there's a lot of joy in that, a lot of like unspoken joy, right? It's interesting. I have so many friends still in the arts, right? And I'm always encouraged to go to their shows, like always inviting me to their big moments. And like, there's an expectation of like celebrating them on social media. And I'm like, but I just like close this, you know, help the sales team close this multi-million dollar deal. Like, I want to celebrate that, but it's a much more quiet joy, right? Because it's not the arts. It's not public. It's not all of these things. But it's still rewarding just in different ways. And I sit at a desk, which I don't love, you know, a lot more than I'm on my feet, you know, blocking a scene, but gotta make steps to make yourself happy. And that's based on, for me, priority. And priority right now is the multiple homes that I own, the multiple children that I have, and their future. So stability wins for now.
Yeah. I think I'm so glad that you said that at the very, very, very end, because one thing that I always say to anyone I know who's an artist, and this is like the only like unsolicited advice thing. It's not even advice, but it's literally just a thought that I always have that I just like want to, if anybody, I don't hear enough people reminding people of this. So I try to remind people of this, everybody from the most talented people I've met to honestly the people who I'm like, you should keep this as a hobby. And I'm being frank and honest with you about that because it's just not there. And that's okay because it can be fun. You know, do your community theater stuff and have a good time. But for everybody, I tell everybody who has any inclination for artistry or creativity, it's like you don't have to have a finite relationship with it. It doesn't have to be over, you know? And as much as I think we all are like, but I don't want to miss that chance to be on fucking One Tree Hill or be in the Marvel universe or whatever stupid shit that is important to me. Like, so whatever. Well, you know, that's dates me, I think, very specifically. No.
Yeah, it's just so good.
And I thought
yeah.
that might hit for you. So that worked.
Yeah, it did. I know some people on the show. Yeah.
Whatever the thing is that you don't want to miss that window, if you're truly dedicated to this art form as a thing you care about, not as your profession, not about who you are, but as a thing you care about, you like it, you want to do it, you want to spend some time in your life doing it, making it, great. You never have to fucking be done. You know how to do it. And I'll even say it to you, Catherine, so that someone else is saying it to your face. And I don't know you. I got no bag in the game at all. But I'll tell you to your face, you never have to be done with any of it. You know how to sing. You never have to quit singing. You could quit singing for 20 fucking years and start singing again, acting again, playing the guitar, riding a bike, whatever the fuck you like. We get too caught up with this, like, and now I'm this. And I'm not saying that's you. I'm saying I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
From a lot of people. I need to put on this apron that says this on the chest so everyone knows. And we're assuming I'm welding that shit in the back. It's not going anywhere. Like, why?
Right.
Tie it in a bow so you can pull the strings, toss the apron, go to fucking something else. Who cares?
I mean, I think it's that, like, we're grasping to make sense of things, right? So it's really easy to say, like, my identity is. It took me years to strip that off and say, like, I am not defined by this thing that I'm literally not even doing.
Right.
I'm, like, going into auditions, saying some words for 2 minutes, and I'm, like, you know, having emotions about it. And then people are saying, okay, thank you. And then I'm going home and going back to fucking bartending. So, like, it's, you know, it is actually not who I was.
Well, and it goes the other way, Catherine, 100%. I'll tell you from talking to people on this show. I just had, I'll give a specific example because that was like his whole episode. We just talked about it. Luke Smith, he graduated not long after you. He's the fucking best dude. His whole episode, he's like, well, you never really know. It's like, am I an actor? Can I call myself that? Have I earned it? And then we got into the nitty gritty and I'm like, dude, you started acting when you were like in middle school, elementary school, some shit like that, young as fuck. You did it. You did it well enough to get into school where you majored in it. You have a degree in it. And Luke hasn't stopped booking something since he got out. Yeah. So it's like, what the fuck are you even talking about? With all due respect, you're not an actor. Bro, have you clocked hours doing anything else as much as this? Right. Other than maybe musician, because Luke's a great guitar player, but like, still, you're a fucking artist. It's not who you are, but this is what you do, bro. Or at least it's what you've done. Right. And you can't even really argue with that. And so it's like, I hear your story and I'm like, if you'd spent that whole 8 years booking every goddamn thing, Catherine, you'd still be talking to me today going, I don't know. Am I an actor? I'm not an actor. Who's an actor?
Totally. I mean, now I've been working.
The label as your identity, it's meaningless one way or the other, is my point.
I've been working in tech for the last 5 or 6 years. And there's this whole like idea of like a woman in tech. You know, it's like, it's like a thing right now.
The fuck are you talking about?
Right. But like, you know, I've like been asked to write blog articles about it. And I still get imposter syndrome every time I get a new job and people are like, oh, yeah, we will pay you. Like one of my most recent jobs, I got like a 58% increase changing companies because they really wanted me because I really knew what I was doing. Right. And like, it's still really hard for me to trust and believe, which I think that there's some lovely humility in stuff like that. Right. But at some point it's like, okay,
you've had a healthy dose of humility. Can we get some fucking like confidence? And I believe in like, look at what I've done. It's not based on just a wild hair up my ass. I think I'm good at this. Look at my accomplishments. At least the time. Just the time. And that's what I was trying to tell Luke. I was like, dude, I'm not even saying you were good in anything. He was. I saw him. But I'm not saying you were good in anything. You've been acting.
But you are an actor.
You're an actor. Like, at least now. And if you quit and start working in a wood shop for like 90 days and you're like, I'm a wood shop guy. I'm like, well, you're a carpenter later when you've been doing it for 90 days. You put some time in. I can't imagine you doing anything for 10 fucking years and then being like, do I do this? Do I not do this? I don't know. Maybe. Acting is one of the only things that's like that. And it's only because you never, ever, ever, ever book a job that goes forever. It's impossible. There are jobs that go fucking 20 years. It's crazy shit. Sure. Yeah. There's crazy shit. And that's, but that closes. It all closes eventually. It goes off the air. It gets canceled. It doesn't get picked up. It, whatever it is, you're done. And I think when you have that built into your industry fundamentally, everybody gets a little bit like, I don't know. I could be serving fucking sandwiches next week. So who knows? Let's not say it.
Right.
You know, I don't want to curse it. It feels almost like that shit. Like, I don't want to call myself an actor. Otherwise I might find myself doing something else. Mm-hmm. I love the honesty that you have with yourself, Catherine, honestly. And I really appreciate the vulnerability as you share the story of moving around with that, because honestly, everybody's story is different, but at this point I have heard a lot of versions of the same chains of events and how people think about it, which makes sense because that's what they did to us, right? They made us all experience the exact same chain of events together. Not surprisingly, we all kind of, you know, there's only so many fucking roads we end up traveling down. But I think it's fascinating that, you know, your attitude about it seems so deeply honest and self-aware. And of course, but I talk to a lot of people, my friends, my new friends, I will say, I talk to a lot of people. They don't all speak with that kind of authenticity to their true feelings that you do. That's why I pointed out. And also, I think the thing that really stands out to me about your story overall is, like, I don't know. It seems like that's a continuing theme for you, because you talked about that in school. You're like, I thought I knew everybody. I thought I knew what was up. I thought I knew me through them. And then later they're like, this is how we feel. And you're like, what the fuck? I've been there, girl. Let me tell you that. I've been at the intervention where it's like, we all feel this way about you. And I'm like, what? I had a roommate who I thought was my homeboy. Move out. Wake up in the morning, gone. I thought we were friends. And not only that, I lived with a third guy who's still my roommate. I was like in my wedding, one of my best friends, and me and Kyle, and then this third guy. The third guy, it wasn't even equivocal, but he was like, it's Rob. I'm leaving because of this. It wasn't the rent. It wasn't that. No, it was like, I got to get away from this fucking guy. And I thought we were fucking friends. It tore me to pieces. I didn't think we were best friends. It's not like losing him was like, no, what am I going to do? Now my best friend's gone. But it was a blind side. And that fucks you up a little bit for a while. Because you're like, then you start being kind of cagey. And you're like, are you my fucking friend? Are you about to fucking leave me in the night? Like, what the fuck is going on? That abandonment shit only has to happen a few times before you get locked into thinking it's going to happen again. And it takes a very mature person to step back from a moment like that and go, okay, what did I do? Not saying it's my fault. Maybe they're an asshole, but what did I do? What happened? Where did I misunderstand? Something I misunderstood. Something. So let me get to the bottom of it. It's so easy to be like, fuck that guy. It's so easy. Yeah. Like, get him out of here. Good. He's gone. That was a cheap way to lose a shitty person. But instead, hopefully you spend a healthy, not overly critical attacking amount, but a healthy amount of, where did I misstep here? And you seem to do that. You seem to be that kind of person who has that capacity to step and go, okay, even if it hurts my feelings in this moment, I'm going to step back and go, what happened?
Well, I think it hurts and hinders, right? It's like the not coming in with a solid opinion. It's like what we were talking about at the beginning, right? The person who's like ready to bounce off ideas, like willing to figure it out, like hear every side of the story before they come to an opinion. Like it's that quality that I have that also I think leads to what you're just talking about, but it can be annoying as shit when.
Yeah, but you have your husband to be like, we're going out back.
Yeah.
It's over. Oh, yeah.
And those people that didn't like me in college, my husband is like, they're fucking assholes. And like, you do not need to be texting them. Like, why are you even bothering with them? Don't watch their show. Don't go see their movie. I'm not watching that with you. No fucking way. So
yeah,
he can be the strong voice for me in those situations, but he's helped me gain a little bit of it. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. And I have to say it really, I fear all the time for some of the people that I know who have fucking kids. I'm like, I can't believe you're going to make some more of you. Cause you're fine and do you, and it's not your fault you're here, but you're going to actively make more of you. Like, you're a fucking train wreck. Like, can we just, you know, I really feel like these kids you got, they got some good mentors. They got some good thoughts coming in their ears on a regular basis. You seem like a really, really great person, honestly.
I hope so. I think I'm at least raising brave, compassionate, and slightly crazy kids.
There's balance in the house.
Yeah.
That's good. That's wonderful. I'll say thank you so much again for doing this. I really appreciate it. It's super fun to get to know you and talk to you. And again, I can't thank you enough for being vulnerable about where you really, you know, your story took the turns that you didn't expect. That, I mean, it's so easy for you to just be like, let me glaze over it. Some people come on this show sometimes, they feel like they need to read me a resume or be like, I did this or I didn't do that or whatever. And you were very frank with me. I really appreciate that. Yeah. And hopefully the listeners do as well.
I'm an open fucking book. So, and I've written about it a lot. There's a lot of stuff on the internet. yeah, because I have to be in the spotlight. I have to talk about it. So, thank you. It was really, really nice to get to know you. I hope that we actually get to cross paths, but you're in LA, right?
I am. I keep this lovely photo of New York behind me to make all my New York guests feel comfortable. And some NCSA art and stuff like that.
Very appreciated. But yeah, so lovely to get to know you. If there's ever anything that I can do for you, holler. I'm here. We're part of each other's community now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.